nonprofit Greyhound Rescue and Adoption Organization. You can contact them at 516-735-5070 or on the World Wide Web at gratefulgrays.org.
All right, then. It's 2 minutes after 6 o'clock. You're listening to radio station... WUSB, Stony Brook, why not? It's time for Off the Wall. We'll be right back. I'm going to step on the theme with 15 seconds left of it. Yeah, just trying to get things working here at the radio. I just realized my chair has no armrest, and that's really going to throw me off for the whole hour. It's another exciting edition of Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening, joined tonight by Kyle.
Yes, indeed. I'm here, of course.
Quite a week. It's been an interesting week. Very wet, rainy weather and things like that. You know, I thought last weekend was a washout. It turned out this weekend was a washout as well. And it hasn't turned sunny yet, so I don't know. Maybe we won't see the sun again. Maybe the sun's mad at us. entirely possible. So, anything exciting happened to you this week?
Oh, gosh. What didn't happen to me that was not riveting and just full of life and just, it's a dream, really. It's a dream to even think about all of those things that I want to tell you happened to me over the course of the week.
It's funny if you know what they
no,
really
it's,
are.
It's so cool.
It's very funny, yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Trust us.
How about you?
I got punched in the face. How about that?
Yeah, I noticed you had a towel with ice and you were walking
up in the kisser there. Yeah. It hurts. It hurts pretty good. I mean, that's something. What would you say to me? I'm sorry, I'm a little out of it still. What would you say to me if I said that in addition to being smacked in the face and losing a tooth too in the process, I point out, still feel the pain, that I had to pay $1,000 for the privilege? What would you say to that?
I would say that is just a total waste. I mean, you get hit in the face and, you know, lose teeth for free.
You would say, Emmanuel, you've been to the dentist, haven't you? You could get your tooth knocked out for free at any bar. And I can, easily, within 20 seconds probably. But no, I had to do it the hard way. I had a tooth extracted. And it just happened yesterday, actually. And, you know, I said this to you before I went down there. I said, you know, Kyle, my tooth, there's no problem. I don't feel any pain.
No, first of all.
I feel good. And I know in 24 hours, I'm not going to feel good.
No, the reality is every time you bring up your dentist, it sounds like you're wrestling an alligator in your basement.
Oh, if only.
You're like climbing up the stairwell talking about your dentist like you just had a gator in a headlock.
Well,
like it's always like you just are like, you know, licking your wounds from this thing. So knowing that. Yes, you said, I'm off to the dentist, to which I replied, good luck and Godspeed, knowing that you were going to go down there and wrestle this enormous reptile.
Well, I mean, I'm not going to call my dentist an enormous reptile. I think that might...
I don't mean it like that.
Ensure the future of some of my other teeth.
It's a trial. It's like...
Yeah, but the thing is, you know, he was looking at x-rays of a tooth. And by the way, this tooth had root canal already in the past. It had a crown on it. You know, I thought in my naivete that when you do all that, when you throw thousands of bucks into your a particular location in your mouth, you're done. That's it. All right, you yanked out the roots. What else could go wrong? Apparently more can go wrong. You know, the crowns wear out and there could still be decay. And he was looking at my x-ray saying, you know, I'm worried about this tooth here. And I was like, I'm not worried about it. I don't feel anything. It seems fine to me.
You mean he's worried that
staying up nights worrying about my tooth? Yes.
No, well, it might become irredeemable before he can get more money out of you for it.
Well, and what's the worst that can happen? The roots are already taken out of the thing. All right, I have a crown on it. So how much worse can it possibly get? I mean, I know there are answers to these questions. I know it can get worse. I know. Getting it extracted was probably the right thing to do. Although he was trying to save it, but he couldn't save it, so he extracted it. But now I have a big gap in my mouth. Now I have a big gap, and I have to get what's known as an implant, which is another few thousand dollars for one tooth. Do you realize the value of a house is in your mouth? Every single tooth, thousands of dollars you can put into every single tooth. Multiply that by how many teeth do we have? Does anybody know?
I think it's 14 on each. So 30,
I thought it was 30. Wait.
32.
Well, if you don't have your wisdom teeth, I think I only had one wisdom tooth taken out. I don't know if that makes me lopsided, but I have most of my teeth.
So you have 45 teeth.
No, I don't have 45 teeth.
Not 45. You shouldn't have 45 just on principle.
I'm going to count. You keep going while I count.
Well, in any event, the idea, I think they're trying to avoid.
I just got to eight. When I got to the half, so I can multiply by two.
16.
So
32.
32. I was right.
Yeah, 32.
Except I'm missing one over there.
But the idea of preventative oral hygiene and surgery like this is to prevent you working with a tooth that is damaged or, you know, not able to handle the forces required to chew comfortably. It's about your bite. And so if you keep the same affected tooth, then you run the risk of biting into something and that tooth not being able to handle that force, and then it breaking or bifurcating.
Ow.
Or
oh, sorry, I just went past.
Don't touch that.
No, I went past the one that got extracted when I was counting. But keep going.
Did you skip that? You don't count that one.
Well, I'm not counting it, but I still touched it, and
right.
It still hurts.
All right.
Sorry.
Keep your hand out. Okay, anyway, the point is, so you've headed that off and will heal, and then, you know, come up with some other solution, like an implant or something to compensate for your ability to bite in that area.
The count is finished. 32 is the number you have if you don't get rid of any wisdom teeth. I've lost one wisdom tooth over the years, so as of yesterday I had 31. Now I'm down to 30 because I had the extraction. And, I guess if I get an implant, I can go back up to 31.
Yeah, because for all intents and purposes, mechanically, it's sort of a stand-in, obviously a stand-in.
Yeah, because if you don't do that, your teeth start shifting, and you have, like, you know, kind of you don't have a very good line of teeth anymore.
Yeah.
You start talking funny.
Well, and yeah, it can predicate movement. Just put it that way. The movement, and then, of course, the forces are being handled by teeth that are in the surrounding area, and if they don't have a tooth to support or balance that, then, you know, those teeth could be weaker as a result of the gap there. And
cascading
so on.
Effect, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Before you know it.
It sounds like you're healthy, though.
Well, I don't know. I had to take all this pain medication. You have to hold something down on your mouth for a few hours to stop the bleeding. I don't want to get too graphic here, but then there's pain to deal with. So you take all these Advils, and 4 hours later you take all these Tylenol. It's kind of an alternating thing. And then you wake up in the morning with a big stomach ache because you took all the painkillers, which hurt the lining of your stomach. So now, you know, I don't have tooth pain anymore unless I touch my tooth or what was left of my tooth. But I do have stomach pain because of the painkillers. So I'm having a real roller coaster of a couple of days here between.
And mind you, tooth pain is all since this oral surgery. You walked out the door remarking specifically that you did not have any pain.
I could have gone on for years more, I'm sure, without feeling anything. And, it was fine. But it wasn't the right thing to do. So I had to go through this. And, man, it's not a lot of fun.
You'll be healthier for it, I think, in the long
run.
When's
that going to happen, Kyle?
Any minute now.
All right. Well, I'm looking forward to it. I am. I'm looking forward to, to that day where I don't feel a big gap in my mouth and where there's no pain. But that's what I went through. That's what I went through. And I just said, when someone does get into a fight and they lose a bunch of teeth, that's a lot of money they got to spend.
Yeah, when you talk about it in value, like per tooth, and add it up like that, it makes you think about it differently. I was thinking maybe doctors should be bidding to work on your mouth. The opportunity to charge you for said teeth, that they should be, submitting proposals and competing for your business, right?
Yeah, I mean,
instead of the other way around.
That brings up the issue of the crown that I had there. Where is that crown now? It's gone. It's not in my mouth anymore, and I'd spent a good sum on that crown. It's just what? It's junk now? I mean, that served me for many years, and I think I should get something back for that.
Well, the base that it was attached to was faulty, and
all right,
they probably still have
not to call my base faulty. I have a pretty good jawline, and we'll see. We'll see what happens.
I think you'll be fine. They probably have copies of your crown tooth, and maybe we'll print out a tooth. I think we should get a copy of them and print them out with a 3D printer.
Yeah, but it's also this awkward period where basically, you know, if I get into a plane crash or something and my jaw's the only thing left and they have to check dental records, they're not going to match because I don't have that tooth anymore. You see? So they're not going to know who I am. I have to fix that.
Didn't the program advisory board tell us that we need 2.2% more pop culture references and happy anecdotes because our show is getting a little bit too dark and grim? You're talking about forensic identification of dental records. I mean, I think maybe we're going to get another note about that.
Yeah, no, it's probably already being written, but you're right. We should make it a little bit more cheery.
Unfortunately, I forgot the pop culture references for this week's show, but maybe you can just skip over or combine it with some of our stories or something.
Yeah.
What's going on?
About anti-Semitism. That'll cheer us up.
Oh, that's a nice light
issue. I've got a bunch. Mm-hmm. I've got a bunch here.
I hear it's everywhere. It's all the rage.
It's all over the place. But you only are supposed to point it out when it comes from certain places, or when you think it's coming from certain places. For instance, yesterday, the leader of Hungary was at the White House, and he's a fascist, he's anti-Semite, but we don't talk about that because he's...
They were the first to build fences when Germany was bringing in refugees and Syrian, victims of the wars over there. I mean, they were building fences. That was it. Like 4 years, 3 years ago,
weren't they the first to dismantle fences though? When East Germany started to fall and people were able to get into Austria as a result. I mean, they got some issues with borders.
They're a little indecisive. Yeah.
But, so this guy, the Prime Minister of Hungary, his name is Viktor Orban, he's wined and dined yesterday at the White House, and all the Republicans are enamored by him. But, you know, the guy's a fascist. He's an anti-Semite. He's
said some awful things.
A populist leader. You know, the kind that we're seeing popping up everywhere. Now, there's all kinds of ways you can tell about where someone is really coming from. He said things such as Hungarianness and Christian values. Now, there's an editorial or an opinion piece from the Jerusalem Post written by Alex Sternberg. And he says when Orban does stuff like this, he's invoking ghosts of Hungary past, populists who came before him preaching the same concepts. And Hungary... during the extreme anti-Semitic interwar years, because it didn't go away after the war.
Between World War II and the present day, or World War I
and
World War II?
I'm not sure which, because there's always a war somewhere. It might be between the first two World Wars. Wow, that was a bad slip. That implies there's going to be another
one. The only two.
Well, okay, it hasn't gone away. My point.
Right. I think you're right. Yeah. Either interim period, you could probably find some stuff. But let's just say for the sake of conversation, it's between the last one and now.
Mm-hmm.
But easily between the first one and the second one.
During that period, all those who advocated for quote-unquote Christian values were not calling for a renewal in the teachings of Christ. Rather, all Hungarians knew that Christian was a code word for not Jewish. And when advertisements appeared in local papers, young Christian men seeking work, the job seeker was simply indicating that he wasn't Jewish. Now, where did this Jew hatred come from? To be sure, Hungary had an uneasy relationship with Jews living in its border within its borders for centuries, but the centuries of mistrust gave way to Jew hatred, with famous blood libels in the 1880s, were exacerbated by the preaching of priests such as Ottokar Prohaska, who was a Catholic priest who rose to prominence in the Hungarian church by becoming the bishop of... oh, Lord, Szekszfehervaro, something like that. Let's just move on. He was a populist, a writer, a speaker, who was the first to coin the term Hungarist, and after preaching that Jews should never be emancipated, that they should be denied entry into universities, that they are lice and vermin who should be gotten rid of, he maintained that he was not anti-Semitic, but preached Christian values and was a Hungarist. This rabidly anti-Semitic priest maintained that there was no such thing as a Hungarian Jew, only Jews who spoke Hungarian. And according to him, Jews could never be trusted and had no moral compass. Only by turning his back on Judaism and converting could the Jew prove his fidelity to Hungary. Now, he influenced many Hungarian leaders even after his death in 1927. He was a spiritual mentor to those who enacted the infamous anti-Jewish laws of 1939 to 1942. Prohaska might have disappeared into history had he not been resurrected by Viktor Orban, the current prime minister, and his Fidesz party. Now, this hateful priest has streets named after him, statues erected, and several years ago, in the Hungarian Holocaust Museum, his picture was placed next to Hitler, indicating their shared desire to resolve the Jewish question with the final solution. The Archbishop of Esztergom, on a visit to the museum, saw this and cried foul. Shortly after, the curator was removed by the Fidesz party, and a revisionist historian put in his place. And now, the museum is focusing on listing those Hungarians who saved Jews during the war. It will not be a long list. Under Orbán's Fidesz, Hungary is adopting the Polish model of denying their country's role in the murder of Jews. Hungary erected a memorial to the victims of German aggression that implied that Hungary was also a victim. It's no wonder that Jews living in Hungary are uneasy about the current government. So, is the current leader, Orban, anti-Semitic? It's hard to answer that. He certainly has created an atmosphere that fosters anti-Jewish agitation across the nation. His adulation of Miklós Horthy, the wartime leader of Hungary, a self-confessed anti-Semite and friend of Hitler, you know, that admiration kind of adds to the feeling of mistrust. So, you know, you see lots and lots of pieces like this about the current prime minister of Hungary, and yet this guy is welcomed with open arms into the White House, and hardly a word is said about it by our other leaders. And, you know, I have to point to our local, quote-unquote, leaders, particularly Lee Zeldin, our representative. Didn't say a word about this. But you know who he did attack? He attacked a Muslim Democratic congresswoman and accused her on the same day that this guy was visiting the White House. He accused her of anti-Semitism. Rashida Tlaib, I believe is how you pronounce it. I'm sorry if I'm getting that wrong. She basically had an interesting quote. I'm trying to find the exact quote here. I think I printed it out. You know what? It didn't. I'll find the actual.
She's one of the new class, right? The freshman senators and House Representative members of the House of Representatives. So one of this generation of newly elected reps in the Democratic Party and one of this class of newly elected female representatives, which have been pretty outspoken, said a lot of things that are I guess, you know, harder for the opposition, harder for the other side to let go, even if it's hypocritical. Go ahead.
I had to go through all these counter ad blockers that wanted me to turn off the ad block before I could read the story, and then ads popping up. And
I vamped.
And then I slow into. Yeah, you did a good job.
I vamped as hard as I could.
This is what. Now they want me to subscribe. No, I'm not interested. Please. Oh, boy, now it took me off where I was.
The House of Representatives.
Boy, the internet is no fun anymore.
One part of the three branches of American government.
I'm sorry. I have the quote now. This is what she said that got Lee Zeldin and all the Republicans in a tizzy. There's a kind of a calming feeling I always tell folks when I think of the Holocaust and the tragedy of the Holocaust and the fact that it was my ancestors, Palestinians, who lost their land and some lost their lives, their livelihood, their human dignity, their existence in many ways have been wiped out. I mean, just all of it was in the name of trying to create a safe haven for Jews post the Holocaust, post the tragedy, and the horrific persecution of Jews across the world at that time. Wow. Second to Hitler in anti-Semitism. Such things as the horrific persecution of Jews and calling the Holocaust a tragedy and saying that Palestinians helped secure a new homeland for the Jewish people. I mean, you read that, and what the Republicans have latched upon, they've latched upon calming feeling, the beginning sentence. There's a kind of a calming feeling when I think of the Holocaust, and they stop there. They don't read the rest of the sentence that says the tragedy, the fact that it was my ancestors who lost their land, and in many ways been wiped out, trying to create a safe haven for Jews. Now, regardless of how accurate that is, because I think a lot of Palestinians didn't voluntarily give up their land to ensure a safe place for the Jewish people, that is clearly not an anti-Semitic statement. It's simply saying that this gives me peace to think that my people sacrificed a lot of what they had to help ensure the survival of more people of a different background. That's what I got out of it. But the Republicans just jumped upon this. They saw some words. They could do some creative editing and accuse her, again, one of two Muslim members of Congress, accuse her of anti-Semitism because it's what they do. Meanwhile, you've got the fascist leader of Hungary in the White House at that very moment. They say nothing about that. This is somebody who could actually have a massive effect on the Jewish population of his country. And God knows how many refugees just looking for a better life. It's so hypocritical. It's so incredibly hypocritical. And to see these two congresswomen constantly being attacked every time they say something, being treated as second or third class citizens, it's disgusting. And to think that right here in Suffolk County, we have a Trump clone doing the same thing. Seriously, whenever Trump says something, Lee Zeldin says the same thing. Just a puppet, a parrot. It's horrible. They keep their mouth shut when there's true injustice, and when they see a victim they can target, they jump on them. I mean, that's your classic bully right there. So that's one thing that happened yesterday.
Ouch. Yeah. Fair amount of irony, considering that, yeah, Orban and Poland and some of these other places are unwilling to have a kind of clear-eyed look at their own history. And what she's saying to me, it strikes me as like a real contemplative look at your own history and considering a considerate view of the impact of how the course of events played out, you know, that victims of the Holocaust did look for a place and that is possible or plausible to imagine. Yeah. I mean, it's, I think an honest, a reflection. Whereas, you know, in the same breath, the people that Zeldin's criticizing are willfully putting up a facade about their national history, and in doing so, kind of contributing to this denial of those events and the tragedy therein. It just stark contrast, lies versus the truth.
Well, they're twisting her comments in two different ways. Now, they're saying that in this quote, she's saying Palestinians willingly donated the land to Jews. While she says that they provided the land for Israel, she doesn't say anything about them opening their arms. What she does say later in the same interview is that it was forced upon them, making it perfectly clear she's describing a land transfer that occurred against their wishes. And conservatives are angrily pointing out that Palestinians oppose the Zionist project, which is something that she did not in any way deny. Now, the second, as we mentioned, even wilder charge against her is for supposedly minimizing the evils of the Holocaust, that she invoked the Holocaust in a positive light, saying she felt a calming feeling knowing her ancestors helped create a safe haven for Jews, claims some publication called the Washington Free Beacon. There is no justification for the twisted and disgusting comments made by Rashida Tlaib just days after the annual Day of Holocaust Remembrance. More than 6 million Jews were murdered during the Holocaust. There is nothing calming about that fact, said House Minority Whip Steve Scalise, who once met with white supremacists and reportedly pitched himself as David Duke without the baggage. Oh, yeah, look it up. It all happened. The claim that Tlaib said that the Holocaust itself was calming is a pure lie. She was using the term calming in reference to a tragedy, but the tragedy is the loss of Palestinian Arab land. She's arguing that the loss to Palestinians that was offset by a gain for Jews is calming to her. Now, amazingly, her positive comment about the establishment of the State of Israel, and it was a positive comment, is being twisted into a positive comment about the Holocaust. Now, of course, it's true that the Holocaust is what led to the establishment of Israel, But the relationship between the two events is an undeniable historical fact, one that Jews frequently observe. She's repeating the same basic observation, but because she's Muslim, can't get away with it.
She's looking at it through a different lens, through, you know, the interrelatedness of her ancestors or people, you know, that she identifies with ethnically or regionally and so on and so forth. But
and we can benefit from that, insight.
Perspective.
It is
a perspective. It's a historical reflection. And something I think people who might not have that same perspective could benefit from seeing that point of view, including Jews.
Absolutely. And the Jewish community is very open to that. In fact, most of the Jewish community, thank God, sees right through this. And you don't hear about that in the news, though.
No.
You only hear about the right-wing Mike Pence-type people that for some reason embrace Israel. It's kind of strange, don't you think? Kind of strange how all these right-wing conservative Christian people are, you know, in their fundamentalist lifestyle, somehow are embracing Israel. It's because of their twisted views of prophecy and the end of the world and keeping Israel perpetually in a state of conflict. You know, it all kind of ties into how they want things to go. And there's a lot of people naive enough to believe that it's sincere. But the actions, the actual actions of the leaders are what you have to look at. And when you see fascists and nationalists and racists and Nazis being embraced by our leadership, that tells the true story. Nothing else does. So look no further. All right. But there's more. There's more Nazi news. That should be a good feature. Nazi news.
Da-da-da-da.
This is definitely Nazi news. There's two stories here. I'll tell you what. I'll do this story first.
Yeah.
We'll go Nazi first, then just general racist views. I guess is probably the best way to do it. So there was an incident. I heard about this. I follow the Auschwitz Museum on Twitter, and they reposted this story. In fact, it's interesting, too. We were talking about World War II and how Hungary is denying any kind of responsibility.
Yeah.
People accuse Poland of the same thing, and it's true to a degree that they are denying any responsibility. But one thing that I have noticed is that whenever somebody refers to Auschwitz as a Polish death camp, the Auschwitz Museum is very quick to point out it was a German camp. They were in occupied Poland, and it was run by Germans. And that is true. That is true. Now, I don't think they're saying, I'm certainly not saying, that there was not rabid anti-Semitism in Poland, as there was in every country, including this one.
Yeah, like that it predicated the invasion and occupation. Auschwitz
was not Poland's idea.
No.
So, and I don't think Auschwitz is even a Polish name, is it?
No.
Sounds pretty German to me. So let's just get our facts straight as far as that goes. That's got nothing to do with criticizing the current regime, pointing out anti-Semitism whenever it shows up, pointing out racism and white nationalism and all kinds of ugly things like that.
But you can make the distinction and be accurate.
Absolutely, yes. I think that's all people want. So I followed him on Twitter, and I happened to find out about this particular story that came out of the United States. It's basically just a back and forth between a parent and the school that their kid went to or is going to. The letter begins, "Can you help us confirm or amend the timeline for the series of events resulting in when we don't know the kid's name?" I believe it's a girl, and the name begins with D. So let's just say
Deirdre.
Okay, Deirdre's discipline. I'm sorry, Deirdre, if we got it right. We are still trying to understand what happened. They've X'd out the name, so I don't think they want to be identified. Sincerely, parent. Okay, in early April, this is the answer. As part of the Living History Project, Mrs. A, let's say Anderson, how about that? Mrs. Anderson assigns a student the costume character of Adolf Hitler. Really, Mrs. Anderson? Really? This is the way you teach?
Whew.
Okay. She instructs him. Yeah, it gets better. She instructs him to perform the Nazi Sieg Heil salute. Yeah. In mid-April, at the first class rehearsal for Living History, when quote-unquote Hitler performs his Nazi salute, 10 to 20 classmates observing the performance return the salute. They're kids. What do you expect them to do? Deirdre becomes upset. She is given, per Mrs. Anderson's email of May 10th, an open platform at that time to appropriately voice her concerns and share with her peers her feelings. She is then, according to Mrs. Anderson's email, instructed by the teachers, quote-unquote, not to address it again when she sees her classmates give Nazi salutes. I just want that statement to weigh in. This kid is told not to address it again when she sees her classmates giving a Nazi salute in the future. Okay, let's move to mid to late April. In these weeks, how long is this assignment for? In these weeks, students regularly give Sieg Heil salutes around campus. Deirdre continues to be upset by the Nazi salutes. Notice how Deirdre is the problem. She shares her concerns with these students and states that the Sieg Heil salute is wrong. At some point, a group of students plans to perform a mass Nazi salute directed at Deirdre when she enters a classroom.
Wow.
She is concerned when she learns of these plans and waits for Mrs. D. Give me a D name. Another D name. Last name.
Miss. Mrs.
It's amazing I can't think of things when you have to, when you're on the spot.
Miss Dotson.
Dotson?
Yeah, it's a dog.
I don't know what that means, but let's come up with a better name. I can't think of a single name beginning with D. Can you believe that? D'Angelo. Mrs. D'Angelo. There you go.
That's a good one.
Thank you.
That's good. Yeah.
Waits for Mrs. D'Angelo to enter the classroom and follows her inside. Mrs. D'Angelo speaks to the class and tells them that the Nazi salute is wrong and that the students should not make that gesture anymore. Thank you, Mrs. D'Angelo.
Wow, she's really teacher of the year here.
In late April, after Mrs. D'Angelo's intervention, incidents of the Nazi salute declined significantly.
Oh, thank heavens.
Now, early May, following additional rehearsals for the Living History Project...
Is it over yet?
No, it never ends. It's living history.
Who? God, it should be drunk history.
I want to find out who Mrs. Anderson really is.
Yeah, without the booze. This class is insane.
All right.
Okay.
Students resume doing the Nazi salute. Following additional rehearsals, they resume the salute. Deirdre continues to be upset and states that it is wrong for students to do that gesture. She just cannot let it go. Racism is bad. Wow. Can't open your mind to maybe another perspective.
Wait, what?
That racism might not be bad.
No,
what?
No.
That's what I was taught. I was taught to accept all views.
No, no, no.
I can make my own facts. All right, continuing. May 9th. This is only a couple days ago. At the final rehearsal for Living History, thank God it's the final rehearsal, when the World War II group is rehearsing, quote-unquote Hitler performs a Sieg Heil salute. 10 to 20 students of the 75 present respond by returning the Nazi salute, and when the teachers do not say anything, Deirdre shouts, "Stop it! Put your hands down now!" She is removed from the classroom for being disrespectful. She is left alone in the hallway for about 10 minutes until Mrs. Jones comes to speak to her. Mrs. Jones states that Deirdre was being disrespectful, and Deirdre responds that she is upset because students keep performing the Nazi salute. She states that it is wrong and that teachers should do more to stop it. Deirdre begins to cry. Mrs. Anderson then comes out and states that Deirdre was being disrespectful. Oh, God forbid, you're disrespectful to Nazis. And I know they're not Nazis. They're kids doing Nazi games, whatever you want to call it.
No, it's educational Nazi.
But it's still right to be upset at.
Yeah.
And it's still wrong, even if it's part of a school play or part of some ridiculous project that never seems to end.
These teachers are doing too much.
Deirdre repeats that she believes the Nazi salute is wrong and that teachers should do more to stop it. Mrs. Anderson interprets this conversation as disrespectful with her tone and body language to teachers. You go, Deirdre. That's what I say. Be disrespectful. Sometimes disrespect is earned.
Yeah, they deserve it.
She instructs Mrs. Jones to take Deirdre to the office of the principal. Dr. Oh, come on. How many people are getting involved here? And the principal's a doctor now. Dr. He's got two names, and the second one begins with B.
Baker.
Dr. Baker, okay.
Dr. Baker,
that's kind of confusing, but okay, fine.
Whatever.
Dr. Baker tells Deirdre that she shouldn't have been disrespectful.
Yeah.
Maybe Dr. Baker, we shouldn't be doing a Nazi salute either. How about
that? Yeah, is he at any point questioning what this lesson that never ends is about?
What does he know? He's a baker. Okay. Oh, now the mail's going to come in. No, it's not disrespectful to bakers, just doctors. All right, May 9th, Mrs. Anderson phones we have a last name, actually, Mrs. Gamble. That name was made public, so I guess that's the last name of the kid. Now we can find out everybody.
Yeah.
Informs her that Deirdre has been disciplined and removed from the classroom for being disruptive and disrespectful. She requests that Mrs. Gamble discuss proper classroom behavior with Deirdre at home. At the end of the conversation, Mrs. Anderson mentions that Deirdre's disruption was in response to students giving it back, giving the salute back.
Yeah.
When asked to clarify what it was, Mrs. Anderson responds, the Nazi salute. Mrs. Gamble is confused and asks for further information because it is the first time she has heard any mention of Nazi salutes occurring at her daughter's school. Mrs. Gamble must end the conversation at 2:30 because she needs to pick up her children from school. But Deirdre remains in the principal's office until her mother picks her up from school at approximately 2:50. She's sobbing and upset, Deirdre, that is. May 9th, students perform the Living History for Parents and Students. In the World War II exhibition, the Hitler character performs a Sieg Heil salute. May 10th, there is an awards performance, the McTonys, to celebrate the Living History performances. When the World War II era wins an award and the boy who played Hitler goes up to receive the award, Mrs. Gamble witnesses, among the few students she can see in front of her, four boys give Nazi salutes. They are kept low at the level of their head, but the boys are looking at each other and smiling, and the gesture is definite. No teacher intervenes. Mrs. Gamble photographs the boys, but because she did not have her camera in her hand at the time the gesture was made, she was not able to photograph making the Sieg Heil salute. But when Deirdre's group wins an award, she uses her speech time to state that some children have been making the Nazi salute around school, and she asks parents to discuss this with her children and explain that the gesture is wrong. Well, final words from Mrs. Anderson on May 10th. In an email to Mrs. Gamble. Deirdre expressed her feelings inappropriately once before during rehearsal early on in our preparations, and she was given an open platform at that time to appropriately voice her concerns and share with her peers her feelings. Then she was asked to not address it again. When she yelled out during the final rehearsal with all fifth grade students in the room and was disrespectful with her tone and body language to me and Mrs. Jones while we were trying to discuss her behavior with her, that is when I phoned you to share with you the behavior, yelling out and being disrespectful with her tone and body language to teachers. And I informed you that she was taking a break to calm down. I called to share my concerns, and I asked you to address it at home with her that evening. After our conversation, her calming break continued, and she went to visit Dr. Baker. Needed to finalize showcase matters, whatever that is. This gave her an opportunity to continue to calm down and share her concerns with him while we finished preparing for showcase and dismissal. Please let us know if we can be of further assistance. I think that's all we have on this. But this was sent to the Auschwitz Museum, and they retweeted it, and now everybody knows about this courageous girl whose name begins with a D and might be Deirdre, and is somewhere, I think, in the U.S. It just goes to show the idiocy of teachers sometimes, where they don't get it. They don't see why this would be horrendously offensive and why people should be commended for speaking out against it. That's the real lesson here. The lesson the teachers did not seem to get.
Yeah, it's like really a half-baked lesson plan. Like, do you make any consideration? You just think, like, you can give a platform to one student when they are upset, and that makes all of this other retelling and reenactment something that you don't need to be considerate of how people react? What about parents and audience members that were coming to watch the final production? Just seems they're really doing too much and kind of got blinders or their own. They're really like exhibiting psychosis on their own lesson plan. Like that they're doing something so meaningful that they don't have to think about any other aspect or how it might appear to those involved or their family who have to sit through this. I mean, ugh.
And there's a bunch of, I don't know what grade this was. But there's a bunch of kids somewhere giving Nazi salutes thinking it's a game. It gets funny.
Yeah, well, think about it instead of, from the aggressor's point of view, think about it as a victim. I mean, these boys are giggling and thinking that, you know, they're really onto something and that, you know, this kind of aggression is something that they're going to be with or that they're going to display. But, like, yeah. Try imagining it from the victim's point of view. It's not as cool at all.
And let's put it in perspective here, because this is a kid in school, and these are kids giving the salute. They don't know what it really means. They're playing a game, all right? I don't want to demonize them any more than they need to be demonized. they're playing a stupid game at the behest of the teachers. The teachers are enabling this. The kid who recognizes that that's wrong, she's done her research. She knows what it means. Clearly, this is not something that she just doesn't like, the fact that they're waving in a particular way. She knows the significance of it. And that's what people should be learning. Every kid in that school should know this is wrong and should feel as outraged as Deirdre or whatever her name was. But knowing there are kids out there like that, that fills me with hope.
Absolutely, yeah. I think that the what I mean by like cool is that it's off limits, so they're going to do it as any student body would.
Yeah, I don't blame them. I blame the teachers because the teachers know they're going to do that.
But without thinking about consequences and impact and without consideration, they're being inconsiderate and so full of themselves with their lesson plan and how, you know, timely and relevant or whatever they're convinced makes them right about performing this. It's not considerate.
I said I had another racism story. This is check out this picture here.
Didn't you have racism light?
It's not racism light. If you know the significance of this.
Yeah, I'm looking
this
at
a picture of four teachers posing with a noose.
What?
Look at that. Four white female teachers, laughing and pointing at a noose.
Why?
That's a good question. This is from Palmdale, California, Summerwind Elementary School. Now, Linda Brandt is the principal. She
sounds like a charter school.
She emailed the photo to her staff, attaching a second image of the noose hanging in an office. Palmdale School District Superintendent Rural Maldonado tells Yahoo Lifestyle for some reason. Yesterday, it was brought to the Palmdale School District's attention that an incident involving the discovery of a noose and possibly inappropriate responses to that discovery occurred at Summerwind Elementary School. The principal and the personnel involved in this matter have been placed on administrative leave. Pending an investigation of the matter, we will follow process and procedures to conduct the investigation. Shaka Phillips, a former teacher, administrator, educational consultant, said she pulled her six-year-old niece from Summerwind on Thursday morning, shocked that all four teachers had resumed their daily lessons despite their alleged suspensions. They had the audacity to show up today, she says. The integrity of the school is completely compromised. To the black community, a noose is a weapon, a symbol of slavery and lynching. I'm looking at this picture. I cannot think what possible reason would you have for holding up a noose and pointing and laughing like that?
Yeah, they look like they just found like a four-leaf clover and they're like giddy. Not exactly what you would think of as as a response to this. I mean, I would have maybe set it on a table and photographed it to circulate to other faculty members.
Why is there a noose in the first place?
Well,
lot of questions have not been answered.
You interrupted me. Hold on. I'm just saying that you know, if they needed to make other teachers aware that this was found, you know, they don't need to be in the photo, you know, smiling and holding it up like they're proud, you know, they just went on a hunt. And secondly, I think that the symbol in this country, unless you're a real big, and it's Halloween time, like a real big Halloween fan, there's really not a lot of room for that particular knot tying to be in people's lives. I don't think you can really display a noose anywhere and not have it be symbolic.
I think a lot of people miss the point here because I'm looking at the I don't usually do this. I don't usually look at the comments, but this story showed up on AOL for some reason. I don't know how I got it. I think Google News directed me to it.
What were they like?
They don't understand why people are offended by this.
Really?
They really don't get it. I'm going to read some of the comments. Maybe it symbolizes justice served to criminals. Why is it always the race card? So sick of it. Right away, turning it around so that the people complaining about this, they're the problem. They're the problem. Why do you have to say that, you know, this is about black people? How do you know it wasn't about something else? But, you know, clearly you're not a black person. Clearly you have not lived with this symbolism all your life. Clearly you don't know what that means.
Or the fall-on effects that you might still encounter today that were sort of – they can draw historically from that imagery.
Just like people don't know what Sieg Heil means. You're just waving. What's the big deal? Why do you have to make such a big deal out of it? Okay, so I want to make some more comments here. Watch out. The politically correct picture police are everywhere. Here's someone else. The noose may be offensive to some, but don't forget the noose was put around the necks of many a horse thief and cattle rustler. I don't hear any complaints from them.
Well, first of all,
they're dead, you moron. And second of all, do you honestly believe that that's what this picture is about cattle rustlers? I mean, it's yes, nooses were used for many people, no question there. But I don't think there was a single person who was lynched because they were white. They were lynched for some reason, you know, justified or not. But black people were the only people who were lynched only because they were black, and only because of who they were, i.e. a hate crime. So a noose means something special to them. And people either refuse to see that or just are incapable of seeing that. And going through these comments, it strikes me how many people just don't get it. Listen to this. People need to grow up and quit living their lives being perennially offended at everything. They just make themselves always miserable and everyone else around them miserable. Hey, you know what? I'm not miserable right now. I'm pissed off, and I'm not miserable. I'd like to know why these four middle-aged ladies are pointing and grinning at a noose in an elementary school. What's that all about? I'd like an explanation. More comments. Back in the 1800s, a lot of white outlaws were hanged, so it's not just a black thing.
Again, missing the point.
Yeah.
I mean, just you could tick them off one by one.
And then the all-out racism comes out. If blacks want more black teachers, maybe they should do a better job encouraging their kids to stay in school and graduate.
Four black teachers giddy over finding a noose, I think, would equally be criticized. Like, what the hell are they forgetting about?
Yeah, that's true. But the racism there, that black people don't graduate from school and that they don't become teachers.
Oh, right.
All these thumbs up for that. All these people praising what they're saying. How is a noose a symbol of racism? If you look at U.S. history, far more white people have been hung by a rope than black people. People are just looking for things to be supposedly offended by. What a myth. There might be some people like that, yeah. But this is not one of those instances. Not at all. The vast majority of non-black people who were done so after they had been prosecuted in a court of law by people who caught them committing a crime, blacks were lynched for the simple reason they were black. That's one of the few comments that gets it. And there are a few people that put in the effort to actually correct some of this garbage. Final comment, you're trying to paint a picture that simply does not exist. Yes, there were some blacks that were unjustly hung, just as there were some whites that were unjustly hung. Yeah, you know what? The civil rights movement, it affected everybody. It didn't just affect the black people. Yeah, we all shared the pain. Slaveholders, slavers, you know, what's the difference? You're making it about race simply because it runs with your narrative, and the vast majority of those actually hung were done without a trial, regardless of color. It's enough to really make you completely flustered and angry. But just keep in mind there are cooler heads out there, and as long as we keep pointing out these things, finding them, and drawing attention to them, they will be at an end at some point.
Yeah, I think it's good to get perspective, to step back, maybe take a breath from some of the headlines and some of the things that we're experiencing. But, and you know, try to have a sense of humor with just how stupid and how misguided some of the opinions about this stuff can be. But at the same time, you know, that humor should not get the better of us. This stuff is not funny, and there is nuance, and we need to pay attention to the nuance.
That's it for us, unfortunately. We're out of time. These hours go by so fast. Write to us, otw@2600.com.
number and dial again.